Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Akua Holt of KPFT Houston, Texas, co-executive producer of Pacifica's national show, COVID, Race, and Democracy.
Until slums are cast into the junk heaps of history, and every family will live in a decent, sanitary home, let us be dissatisfied.
Today on Sprouts, we look at the legacy of the nonviolent movement, also known as the Civil Rights Movement. In 1967, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his groundbreaking speech, Where Do You Go From Here? Chaos or Community, at the 11th Annual Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. The speech, which later became a book, was Dr. King's analysis of the state of American race relations and the movement after a decade of civil rights struggles in the U.S.
I want to say to you, as I move to my conclusion, as we talk about where do we go from here, we must honestly face the fact that the movement must address itself to the question of restructuring the whole of American society. There are 40 million poor people here. And one day we must ask the question, why are there 40 million poor people in America? And when you begin to ask that question, you're raising a question about the economic system, about a broader distribution of wealth. When you ask that question, you begin to question the capitalistic economy. And I'm simply saying that more and more, we've got to begin to ask questions about the whole society. We are called upon to help the discouraged beggars in life's marketplace. But one day we must come to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. It means that questions must be raised. And you see, my friends, when you deal with this, you begin to ask the question, who owns the oil? You begin to ask the question, who owns the iron ore? You begin to ask the question, why is it that people have to pay water bills in a world that's two-thirds water? These are words that must be said. Now, don't think you have me in a bind today. I'm not talking about communism. What I'm talking about is far beyond communism. My inspiration didn't come from Karl Marx. My inspiration didn't come from Engels. My inspiration didn't come from Trotsky. My inspiration didn't come from Lenin. Yes, I read Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital a long time ago. And I saw that maybe Marx didn't follow Hegel enough. He took his dialectics, but he left out his idealism and his spiritualism, and he went over to a German philosopher by the name of Feuerbach and took his materialism and made it into a system that he called dialectical materialism. I have to reject that. What I'm saying to you this morning, communism forgets that life is individual. Capitalism forgets that life is social. And the kingdom of brotherhood is found neither in the thesis of communism nor the antithesis of capitalism, but in a higher synthesis. It's found in a higher synthesis that combines the truths of both. Now, when I say questioning the whole society, it means ultimately coming to see that the problem of racism the problem of economic exploitation, and the problem of war are all tied together. These are the triple evils that are interrelated. So I conclude by saying today that we have a task, and let us go out with a divine dissatisfaction. Let us be dissatisfied until America will no longer have a high blood pressure of creeds and an anemia of deeds. Let us be dissatisfied until the tragic walls that separate the outer city of wealth and comfort from the inner city of poverty and despair shall be crushed by the battering rams of the forces of justice. Let us be dissatisfied until slums are cast into the junk heaps of history and every family will live in a decent sanitary home. Let us be dissatisfied until the dark yesterdays of segregated schools will be transformed into bright tomorrows of quality integrated education. Let us be dissatisfied until integration is not seen as a problem, but as an opportunity to participate in the beauty of diversity. Let us be dissatisfied until men and women, however black they may be, will be judged on the basis of the content of that character, not on the basis of the color of their skin. Let us be dissatisfied. Let us be dissatisfied until every state capital be housed by a governor who will do justly, who will love mercy, and who will walk humbly with his God. Let us be dissatisfied until from every city hall justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Let us be dissatisfied until that day when the lion and the lamb shall lie down together. And every man will sit under his own vine and fig tree, and none shall be afraid. Let us be dissatisfied. And men will recognize that out of one blood, God made all men to dwell upon the face of the earth. Let us be dissatisfied until that day when nobody will shout white power, when nobody will shout black power, but everybody will talk about God's power and human power.
Outside the historic Brown Chapel AME Church in Selma, Alabama, Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Spoke with civil rights pioneer, the late Reverend Dr. C.T. Vivian, a close friend and lieutenant to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Dr. Vivian was the founder of the C.T. Vivian Leadership Institute.
Nonviolent direct action is something we have brought to America, right? Nonviolent direct action has no violence in it. It is not there to destroy. It's there to develop and build. And that's what we've been trying to do. At the core of that is an understanding of faithful life, right?
Do you think full voting rights have been achieved at this point?
No. Because America won't change that quickly. See, or if they had, they would have done it in 1776. There is nothing we haven't done for this nation. We've died for it, huh? It's been overlooked what we've done for it. But knowing the scriptures, we kept living by faith. We kept understanding that it's something deeper than politics that makes life worth living.
What gave you the courage 50 years ago to to stand up at the courthouse to make that walk?
Faith. Mm-hmm. Our grandmothers and great-grandmothers taught us how to live, right? Even when they couldn't speak well as long as what the society was concerned about. But they were telling us about is as old as the universe itself.
Can you describe what happened to you, the violence against you, even leading up to March 7th, when you stood up for voting rights?
It's the understanding of nonviolent direct action. That's the change. What we have to see beyond all things, that Martin King was our leader. What we have and what was given to us from its very beginnings is an understanding that we could not win by killing. Light doesn't come because of darkness, all right? We are here to change America and always have been. America sees it as they're changing us. Mm-hmm. But you see, when a Christian church exists that doesn't want to accept anybody but white people, right? They've already denied the faith, all right? Can you be a Christian and a racist at the same time? See, and we refuse to be racist, right? We just want to simply tell America what their faith is about. America talks about democracy, but they've kept us from voting for years. And even when they give us the vote on paper, politically, they turn around and take away the important part of what we have fought for and what they said they were giving. The truth is that we have to work together to save ourselves politically, save ourselves spiritually, and save ourselves physically. When the preacher has to stand at the door and keep people out because of the color of their skin, something's wrong with their faith.
Did you stand in front of Sheriff Clark and get punched in the face?
Well, yes, but that's not why I was standing there. Point being is I was standing in front of him because we don't have to fear the opposition, and we are willing to die for the freedom they say they have.
The Reverend Dr. C.T. Vivian.
Been having a musical tribute to Martin Luther King for almost 40 years.
Dr. Ann Lundy, music director of the Community Music Center of Houston, whose mission for over four decades has been the preservation, appreciation, and performance of music that reflect Black musical traditions.
This is our way as musicians to recognize and remember his many contributions to the world. I would see these wonderful marches and the rallies and those wonderful things in our community and on television. And I thought to myself, you know, our way of letting the world know that he touched everybody's lives. But as a musician, as someone who lives and works in the arts, he also inspired us. And through his inspiration, we just feel like this is our way of remembering him with our musical offerings. I knew about Coretta Scott King, that she was a trained musician. My understanding that she was a wonderful musical artist, I think that contributed to the family's love with music. I remember one of those famous speeches when he says, if I was a drum major, I was a drum major for righteousness. I was a drum major for peace. Those kinds of things where he would include musical references regarding how we as, you know, as human beings can relate to each other. Everybody loves some kind of music. If you go any part of the world, there's some kind of musical offering. Music, I always thought of as the universal language. So we've been doing this for, like we said, almost 40 years. I've always wanted to involve the community in celebrating his many contributions, include the musical aspects of life. It doesn't matter what you do musically. Just enjoy music. Participate in music.
Well, speaking of participation, tell us about what we're going to hear today.
Yeah, speaking from our past musical experiences, we go to what I think of as we used to call the old Negro spirituals, one of those famous spirituals from the church, Soon I Will Be Done with the Troubles of the World, Going Home to Live with God. As musicians, this is our way of remembering Dr. King's many contributions to humanity.
How can the audience view this performance. Everything is online due to the pandemic.
Visit our website, Community Music Center of Houston. You can look us up there. Thank you so much. I'm Ann Lundy, Community Music Center of Houston Music Director.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local production of national interest. I'm Akua Holt of Pacifica Radio and co-executive producer of the Pacifica National Show, COVID, Race, and Democracy. The Reverend Liz Theo Harris is calling for a revolution, a moral revolution, that is, for the soul of the nation. She is director of Karyos Center and co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. Theo Harris, along with a group of ministers, was arrested while praying on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court.
So I have been engaged in grassroots anti-poverty organizing and nonviolent direct action for about 25 years now. So it would be hard to say how many times I've protested, including at the U.S. Capitol. In 2018, the Poor People's Campaign launched with the largest and most expansive wave of nonviolent civil disobedience at the U.S. Capitol and at state capitals across the country. It was really the largest wave of nonviolent civil disobedience in U.S. history. And so I'm pretty familiar with folks, popular movements actually coming together, making our demands clear, protesting nonviolently. And I would really want to suggest that what happened at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th is not actually a protest. It's not a part of popular demands of the people to right the wrongs of society. It really is a failed attempt, but an attempt at subverting democracy, of taking away the power of people and the power of people to elect leaders that can then be put into office to expand health care and raise wages and make life better for folk. And so, you know, I think what we have been met with before when protesting at the U.S. Capitol has been excessive force for just praying, for just singing, for marching peacefully. But also why we're at the Capitol is for very different reasons. It's to call those, including some of these senators and congresspeople and surely the president himself, to account for policy violence. And who was at the Capitol last week was trying to, you know, continue that kind of policy violence and violence perpetrated against people across this country.
Absolutely. And of course, we've been calling it an insurrection and a failed coup attempt. There have been a number of arrests. The police officer that has been taking selfies with the mob, well, he's been fired. The guy in the big headpiece with the horns was wearing a QAnon shirt, and he was arrested. Some were heard giving military orders throughout the crowd, confirming suspicions that ex-militia and law enforcement were among those supporters that stormed the Capitol. Reverend Theo Harris, January 2021 has really gotten off on a historic start. This month, we witnessed the red state of Georgia turn blue, and as a result, Democrats will wield control of the White House and both houses of Congress. Juxtapose that, however, against one of the most horrific political insurgencies in modern day, and in the very same month, the first black woman will be next in line to the presidency. And race is the dynamic fueling each of these situations. Reverend Liz Theo Harris, is America winning or losing the fight to end racism in this country?
So I think we have to see January 6th and, you know, months and years of a kind of fascistic white supremacist movement gaining strength and gaining support from Trump and from many of his enablers and other senators and congresspeople. We have to see it in light of the fact that the night before, indeed, Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff were elected as the first black and Jewish senators of the state of Georgia in an election where there was very historic voter turnout, especially amongst poor and low income white, black, Latino, Native people from rural areas and urban areas and small towns. And following an election, a general election where, again, historic numbers of what is a fusion coalition of people turning out, especially when politicians say they're interested in expanding health care and raising wages. And so I think these are not easy times. We have seen this kind of violence before, especially actually when progressive change around race, around poverty are happening, and that there's this response, this reaction that is very reactionary to it. You know, we saw this in the period after the Civil War, in the period of Reconstruction, where you then had these destructionists who, you know, rioted like folk did last week, who lynched and killed, we've seen it, you know, as a response to Native American, Indigenous people. We've seen it as workers and as women and as Latinos and as Asians have come together fighting for justice in our nation's history, and we're seeing it again. And so I think we've learned a lot from our brothers and sisters in South Africa, where folks have taught us the saying that a dying mule kicks the hardest. So I would like to suggest that rather than, you know, a movement for racial justice that is really strong and growing right now, being on the wane, instead we're getting this kind of reaction because of the strength, because of people needing and definitely coming together, you know, in the movement for Black Lives, in the powerful organizing amongst immigrants, some of the stands that Native American Indigenous folks are, and you know, what we in the Poor People's Campaign are doing of pulling together people across race into a powerful racial and economic justice movement. And I think that's exciting.
Thanks to Verna Avery Brown of WPFW for filing this report. Stay up to date about the Poor People's Campaign and the continuation of Dr. King's work for social justice at poorpeoplescampaign.org. Josh Barker of New York Amsterdam News talked to WPFW's producer and host, Imhotep Gary Bird, about the late Dr. Carter G. Woodson, author of The Miseducation of the Negro and founder of Negro History Week in 1926, which later became a national observance of Black History Month in 1976.
The ASAWA, which is the Association for African American Studies and Life, you know, announces the theme every year. That organization was founded by Carter G. Woodson, who started Black History Week, which eventually evolved into what we have today, Black History Month. And so when we talk about the Black family, you know, throughout history, there have been various societal impacts that have had a negative effect on Black families, all the way back going to slavery when families were torn apart, to today with the high number of incarceration of our brothers and sisters, which are being taken out of the home at disproportionate rates. And so, you know, we're also going to be discussing genealogy. You know, unfortunately for a lot of our brothers and sisters, you know, we don't have the resources to really go back and see. You know, we have Ancestry and 23andMe and all those other things to really go back and see where we come from in Africa. But not many of us are able to trace all the way back to see where our families were enslaved at, where they were, who they were, because a lot of their history was erased against our own free will. So we're going to be talking about that all this month. You know, so many families have changed the lives of Black America, you know, from the Sharpton family to Sylvia Woodson's family to the King family. And we're going to be talking about that historic, most historical impacts as well. So this month, it is all about family.
Josh Barker, Amsterdam News, New York. Thanks to WBAI's Imhotep Gary Bird. Cicely Tyson's memoir, Just As I Am, was published on January 26, 2021, during an interview with Gayle King. When asked how she wanted to be remembered, Ms. Tyson said, "I've done my best. That's all." Cicely Tyson made her transition on January 28, 2021. We give thanks to her great spirit. Ashe.
You know, in addition to the movies, in addition to television and all that, how many times did Cicely Tyson appear on the cover of Jet or Ebony? I mean, she was a constant presence. Yeah, she was. And in terms of standards of beauty.
There hasn't been a time in my life when Cicely Tyson hasn't been there. And I just assumed that she would always be there. And when she passed the other day, it just so caught me off guard because my universe, there's a hole in the universe now where Cicely was. She was my first screen mother, and it was always that way between us, like mother and son. Whenever I would see her, I would greet her deferentially, "Hello, mother," and she would give me that nod of approval, "Son." And that's just how it was with us, and not just me. I mean, I know she had a similar relationship with so many, countless legions, really, of others. And so there is a hole. There was a hole for all of us, for black people, for white people, for those who love dignity, honor, justice, equality. There is a hole.
She had master classes. She would invite so many professional people to come to give master classes to our children.
I'll never forget calling her and letting her know I got Motown Musical. She screamed over the phone. She was like, "You know, you have it. I told you you have it."
The way that Ms. Tyson mingled with the students was truly amazing. She would come every year to the graduation.
Having her presence in this school alone was always inspiring, because I already knew who she was.
When you put someone's name on a school or a building, sometimes it's just ceremonial, right? But Cicely Tyson, she was here. She came to school. She was here. She touched us.
And after 25 years, I think about that. She always made you stand tall.
You just heard voices from around the country paying homage to Ms. Cicely Tyson, including Dr. Greg Carr and LeVar Burton, who came of age while watching her on stage, screen, and on magazine covers, along with students and faculty of the Cicely Tyson School of Performing and Fine Arts. She was a guiding force for the school and those who roamed its halls for 25 years. Students say Ms. Tyson is a beacon of hope that will continue to shine bright for generations to come. That's it for Sprouts. Today's show was brought to you by the team of COVID, Race, and Democracy, a Pacifica Radio production. Produced and edited by Paulina Vasiliev and Akul Holt. Our senior editor is Lona Alliance. The music you heard included Troubles of the World by the Community Music Center of Houston. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Brian David at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg. That's Ursula at Pacifica.org. I'm Akua Holt. Thank you for listening. See you next week on Sprouts.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Good morning, everybody. This is DK Holm, and welcome to Film at 11, KBOO's weekly movie review program. I've got Jeff Britta and Matthew online to discuss various movies, and I'll be talking at the end of the show about one of the new BFI books. First,
in questa terra oscura, Cristo non è disceso. Cristo si è fermato a Ebori.
When Francesco Rosi's film Christ Stopped at Eboli was released in the United States in 1979, it was greeted with some disappointment and skepticism. Andrew Saris in the Village Voice criticized it for various leaps and errors and dropped storylines. But there was a reason for that. Christ Stopped at Eboli